Welcome to What is Going Om for New Thought from the Edge of Om. Each week on Om Time's flagship radio show, veteran broadcaster, author, and media consultant Sandy Sedgbeer conducts thought-provoking interviews with inspirational authors, artists, musicians, scientists, speakers, and filmmakers who are working at the point where spirituality and science meet consciousness at the very edge of Om. Here is your host, Sandy Sedgbeer.
Hello. Intuition. Steve Jobs based his career on it. Einstein said it helped him devise his theory of relativity. Bill Gates and Richard Branson call it their superpower. And numerous entrepreneurs, business executives, and even gamblers admit they base all their major decisions on their gut instinct or intuition. Some claim that intuition is a super sense we all possess, but not everyone recognizes it or listens to it. Others say that intuition is not something we're born with, but rather is something that can develop over time if we work at it. Teresa Chung works closely with scientists studying consciousness and recently collaborated with neuroscientist Dr. Julia Mossbridge from the Institute of Noetic Sciences on the premonition code. Since leaving King's College, Cambridge, with a Master's in Theology and English, she's written numerous best-selling mind, body, spirit books, including two Sunday Times top 10 bestsellers. And her combined titles, which have achieved over 500,000 sales, have been translated into over 30 different languages. Teresa Chung joins me now to discuss her new book, 21 Rituals to Ignite Your Intuition, which draws on science, psychology, and her own techniques to help you tune into your inner wisdom, cultivate your intuition, and start making better decisions so that you can live a happier, more purposeful, and successful life. Teresa Chung, welcome.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm really happy to be here.
Teresa, you're a prolific contributor to the mind-body-spirit arena with literally dozens of books in print, including several on angels and heaven. You worked with ION's neuroscientist, Dr. Julia Mossbridge, on the premonition code. So tell us a little bit about your own spiritual journey, because I know you were born into a family of spiritualists. But was your spiritual journey, I mean, did it start from the very beginning? And was it always a given that you would end up working in the mind, body, spirit arena?
I think so. I mean, I was born into a family of traveling spiritualists, and it was just commonplace for me to go to demonstrations of mediumship. That's how we lived our life. My mom was a professional astrologer. So that's how I grew up. And my frustration growing up was that I was surrounded by people who had the gift, if you want to call it that, but I had none. I did not have any superpowers or ability at the time. Looking back now in hindsight, I could see that I did. I just wasn't recognizing them for what they were. So what I decided to do was to throw my passion into researching it, at least trying to find out what's going on with these people who will stand up in front of a room of people and allegedly connect with the other side. What's going on in astrology? What's happening in numerology? I had a passion, a thirst for understanding, perhaps because I didn't feel I had those abilities myself. I was home educated and somehow landed at King's College, Cambridge, where I was thrown into the world of academica. Studied theology and all the world religions there. So that was my passion.
So didn't your parents try to encourage you? Teresa, I think we're having some problems with your sound. Oh.
It's poor connection, it says poor connection.
Ah. Are you calling in? We can, but you were fading in and out quite a bit there. Are you calling in on Skype?
I am.
You are. Okay. Are you using Skype as your phone? Okay, well, let's keep going and see what happens. Too bad, we might have a problem with it. Okay.
Okay.
All right, Chris. Thank you. So you were saying that, or at least I said to you, did your parents not try to train you to recognize some of these gifts within yourself?
No, I mean, it was very much in my family. You just did it. There was no concept of training. And that's something I've carried with me to this day to try and not make it complicated. It's just something that comes natural for them. It was something, and I thought it was natural. I literally, when I went to university, I literally thought that people all had these abilities because that's how I grew up. And of course, I realized when I went out into the real world, especially the world of academia, that this kind of thing, a lot of people raise their eyebrows and think that you're slightly nuts when you start talking about angels or seeing dead people or having powers of intuition or sensing things. So it has been a very long journey for me. And it wasn't really until my early 30s that I started to get sort of inklings of psychic growth. And it was when I realized I had to stop trying to acquire knowledge and simply relax and let things happen. Mm. And that's a journey I talk about in my book. But the dominant theme of my life was I think you can't do it all in this life. And if I maybe had the gift, I probably wouldn't have had the drive to find out so much about it, the drive to go through Cambridge and to use that to connect to neuroscientists and scientists, to see where the research is, the drive to try and understand what's going on in the brains of people when these things happen, the drive to ask people to write to me with their stories and collate them in book form, and as you say, to do book after book after book. I've been very, very blessed in the world of publishing that I've been able to write so much about it. But I think one of the reasons is I come at it with saying, well, look, I don't have these powers, or I don't think I have, but I do believe there's something more to this life than meets the eye. Let's investigate. Let's see where science is. Let's see some anecdotal evidence. Let's discuss and share. That's the theme of my books, and I think it does resonate.
There is a confusing contradiction in your book, where at one point it says that mm-hmm. research has shown that, contrary yes. to popular opinion, intuition isn't something we're born with, and it doesn't come naturally to everyone. It's a skill we learn. Now, I agree that, you know, we can get yep. better at it, but I'd certainly contest research that suggests that intuition is not something we're born with. I mean, how can anyone possibly know that?
Well, some people it happens naturally, but we've all met some people who just really sort of, like, you know, sort of go through life not really being intuitive at all. But what I'm saying is that gives us hope, because it is actually a skill you can learn. Some of us will be better than others. It's like music, for example. I love and I adore music, and I would give anything to be able to stand on stage and play a piano concerto. But however much I train and practice, I haven't got that flair. But I can get to a certain level of competence. And that's what I believe from the research I've looked at, what science is saying, that you can train it to a certain level to get competence.
Hmm. Well, I still disagree with science, because I don't think they can possibly know whether we're born with it or not. I mean, they can't do these kinds of tests on babies because there's, you know, they can't communicate.
No, it's
However,
isn't it?
I completely agree that.
Mm.
Yeah,
I mean, there is
I do
a
too.
God gene,
yeah.
a spiritual gene, and I think in times past, people who are more intuitive than others, that's in their DNA, and I think they were necessary for survival. They were the shamans, the healers, the wise men and women who could actually help and heal tribal cultures in times of crisis, alert them to danger. I do believe that about one in four of us are born perhaps with something more that you can develop. And I think these people need to be studied and researched. And that's when my work on the premonition code, where I worked with a neuroscientist, Dr. Julian Mossbridge, amazing experience that. And we created a big website, getting people to enter the website and do training the scientific way to see if we can identify traits. But what I did find with writing all these books is we have so much to learn about what we're capable of.
Exactly.
And how exciting this field is. And actually, being a scientist now is, the scientists who are researching consciousness, they all say what joy they have in their work, because they're learning so much and that is empowering for the human race. And I have been blessed to work with some of them, and I'm continuing to work with them as well, with the team at ION.
I see that you, in your book, you know, it's littered with quotes about intuition. And the one that really is a standout for me was Dean Koontz, who said intuition is seeing with the soul. And I think that's the issue right there, is that some people do not see with the soul. And so they think they don't have intuition.
Yeah, it's because of the way the world's gone at the moment. You know, everything is about, you see with through external material things. I mean, we put such a value today, sadly, on the external, getting your identity from your Facebook followers or how much money you have or what your figure is or what your career is. That's the world, the way the world is heading at the moment is quite frightening. What's happening is, I think, at the price of people's souls. And I believe there are many soulless people walking around because they have so taken on board that materialistic message. They've almost like killed their souls in the process.
Yes.
And we see it on the world stage at the moment. Soulless people, truly soulless people. And sadly, they tend to have a lot of followers and, you know, and other people flock to them. And it's scary times. And I think that's why it's wonderful what you're doing and what people in this movement are doing to remind people that we are not the material. We are not. We are more than how we look or what we earn. And that's my passion. And even though I didn't think I had ability when I was growing up, I've always known that. I've always looked for something more, that there is an essence in someone, something that is everybody that is priceless. And that getting your identity from what you do, or who follows you, or how much money you have, it costs your soul.
Of course it does, yeah. So what inspired you to write...
Sorry.
What inspired you to write 21 Rituals to Ignite Your Intuition?
It was basically, because when I started out writing, oh, good 20, 25 years ago, it was a different world we live in. It was very easy, in a way, to write about angels and heaven. There was more willingness to embrace that. But as I said, the world is changing and people are becoming more material and practical. And what I've done is I've adapted with the time. So what I've done with this is tried to adapt spirituality to a more materialistic generation that wants to see the science, that wants to understand why you should do this and what the benefits are in a very clear way. Because I said, the books I wrote 15 years ago, which were stories of people who'd been to heaven or seen angels, doing that right now, if I did that with my major publishers especially, I would be laughed at almost, or not laughed at, but never taken seriously. And what I want is the spirit to be taken seriously. And the compromise is that I've had to be less fluffy and less comforting in my writing and more harsher with the science. But the plus side is the Premonition Code made the front page of the Daily Mail. Now, my other books about angels, that would never have happened. But because I teamed up with a neuroscientist, the front page, I could not believe it. My publishers were like, would you believe it? It says, we can see the future. Neuroscientists and spiritualists work together. That was the headline. And it's more about getting this message out to people in a way that maybe today they will understand more. And it's the same way with being invited onto Piers Morgan to talk about it. It's because of the way I'm now approaching it in a different way.
Well, I don't think you know, we can deny that spirituality is going mainstream. And when you get people like Dean Radin from IONS, you know, writing a book saying magic is real and having endorsements from Nobel Prize winning scientists and physicists, we have to accept that this
exactly.
is becoming
and Dean,
so
Dean
much
Radin
more popular.
Wrote the foreword to the Premonition Code, but my thing is the distribution of the book. How easy is it? Yes, we can get it online, but I'm looking at and the media getting onto the shows that people watch. I mean, people who are interested in spirituality are going to seek out spiritual shows. But the mainstream, it's not yet hitting their consciousness enough. And also, a lot of spiritual books are overly full of jargon. and inaccessible and complicated exercises. It's trying to make it simple and show that it is so natural to have this longing for a sense of connection and wholeness and beauty and to have compassion, to show that that's a natural thing. That's where I'm sort of at the moment. And like anything in life, I make mistakes and sometimes it doesn't work, but I like to constantly evolve with my writing and not to write the same kind of book or do the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk a little bit more about the 21 rituals for to ignite your intuition. Many people say they don't feel they're very intuitive, they don't recognize it, etc. We all perceive the world and take in information differently. Some people get information from an inner voice, some from mental pictures, others from feelings. In your experience, is there one form of intuition that's easier or harder for a person to recognize?
I'm going to go to the one where I believe intuition first speaks to us. And it's the one where science is now at, where science is studying where intuition manifests, and that's in the body. It's raised heart rate for no reason. And the scientific research into intuition is based around presentiment, which is bodily awareness of something happening before it's possible to know that it's happening. And I talk about that in the Prem Code and a little bit in 21 Rituals to Ignite Your Intuition. So pay attention to signals within your body. If your hand starts to shake gently before you're sending a text, or if you have an increased heart rate and you can't quite understand, your stomach, of course, the primitive brain, the first brain, your stomach speaks to you. Tune into your body, because that, I believe, is the first way intuition speaks to us. But again, we are so disconnected from that. A lot of us have these bodily sensations and we just dismiss them as, oh, one of those things. But if it's not to do with something you've eaten or you haven't got a pre-existing medical condition and you are sensing some subtle change in your body, listen to that. It's trying to tell you something. And time and time again in my life, if I look back, I have had unusual bodily sensations before something important was going to happen to me and before I could even know that was happening. When you meet someone, what's happening with your heart rate? Pay attention to these signs, because that's how I believe intuition first speaks to you. And then after that, I believe the second way, I think, is through your dreams. I think that's another neglected way that people don't tune into their intuition enough. Every single night, our unconscious mind is like an internal therapist, giving us messages and signals, but in a symbolic language we need to translate. And then the third way is through our feelings, of course. Sometimes we feel things for no reason, and it's just acknowledging those feelings and letting them and writing about them and see what they can teach you. All these ways, I think, are very powerful ways that intuition will talk to us, but they are subtle, and we live in an unsubtle world right now where
Absolutely.
We're so busy. I mean, I grew up in a time where, you know...
I'm going to hold you there, Teresa. We have to go to the break now. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. My guest today is best-selling Mind, Body, Spirit author Teresa Chung, whose latest book offers 21 proven daily rituals to help you ignite your intuition. We'll be back with more from Teresa Chung after the break.
The future of internet radio is here. OM Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
I'm Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called Bukavu in the Congo.
We were a loving family. And then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day.
People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle you to America and all your problems are done, they don't understand that that's the beginning of everything.
I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at EmbraceRefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Teresa Chung, you say in your book it's possible to boost our intuitive reflexes through daily rituals. In short, the more ritual there is in our lives, the more intuitive we're likely to become. Tell us how and why rituals are the perfect way to ignite our intuition.
Absolutely perfect, because we've all had it, haven't we? We all tend to have intuitive insights, like in the shower or when we're traveling or sitting on a train and sort of switching off. And what ritual does is it kind of recreates that. A ritual gives you something to do which has symbolic meaning. So your conscious mind is distracted by what you're doing, be that light a candle, flick a coin, write in your journal. And that frees up your unconscious mind for your intuition to speak to you. So rituals really are perfect, because rituals are all symbolic acts of self-care, self-nurturing, but they don't require really active thought. Just as having a shower, most of us do it so often, washing ourselves, that we kind of switch off. And that allows the unconscious mind to surface. And that is why daily rituals are so important. Things you do kind of on automatic, but you know have symbolic and powerful meaning. So that distracts your conscious mind, and your conscious mind is the enemy of your intuition. It blocks it. And it allows your intuition to surface.
Do you think also when we're practicing a ritual, we are placing all our focus on it, we're imbuing it with an intention, and that the intention itself is helpful?
Certainly intention is very, very helpful. But curiously, there's been a research study to show that believing in your ritual isn't actually required. What's important is doing it and understanding the personal meaning behind it. Because a ritual just helps you switch off and get into that meditative state where your intuition can take over. And your intuition is a bit like a bird. It doesn't like being caged. And if you give it too much instructions and advice, it won't be able to express itself. You'll crush it. Intuition is something you can, it's like a bird, you can train it to sit on your shoulder, but you'll never fully own it. And it's the same with intuition. Don't restrict it too much with to-dos.
Mm-hmm.
And keep it light. How rituals do keep things light for your intuition. This is a bit difficult to explain. I hope I explain it better in the book. But what I'm saying is that intuition is something you can't fully ever control, but you can give
you
it
can harness it, but you can't control it. Yeah,
perfect. Yeah. Like a bird, like a wild bird, like, yes, or a butterfly, you can let it sit on your hand, but the minute you try and capture it, you basically kill it.
Now, you've got 21 rituals, 3 weeks with one a day, and you actually you have them laid out almost like the first week. There's 7 rituals that are performed ideally in the morning. I mean, it's not a hard and fast rule, but you suggest the morning. Mm-hmm. The second week, more suited to the daytime. And the third week, they're more suited to the evenings. What difference does the time of day make?
Well, because the the morning, what you do, because most of the rituals, they only take a few minutes, by the way. I don't want the people to think, oh, my goodness, I've got to sit for hours meditating. That's another thing I try to. These take, like, seconds. Very, very short things. But the morning, you set the tone for your day. When you wake up, your first thoughts, your first actions do set the tone. So treat them with sacred reverence, and then your day may well reward you. During the day, it's more about being receptive and listening to what's going on around you and noticing it, because we're busy going on with our day. And then in the evening, it's more about gratitude, huge power in gratitude, reflection, and the power and rejuvenating. So I group these rituals into those categories because they just seem more suited to our daytime routine, so that they fit in. Because I wanted them to fit in very, very easily and naturally. Like, one is simply asking you to fake a smile in front of the mirror every morning, a great big smile, even if you don't feel like it. Because, again, and I back every ritual up with research shows that you can trick your brain into feeling more upbeat. The brain doesn't know the difference between a fake smile and a real smile. And if your brain starts thinking you're upbeat, then your spirit may well be more likely to play the game as well.
So let's look at some of the rituals. There's a few that I've pulled out here. You start ritual one with forget your phone. Say a few words about that one.
Well, phones are wonderful. I mean, I think they are a miracle and a blessing. I wouldn't be speaking to you without one now. And how incredible is that? I'm here, Windsor, UK, and you're in America, and we're having this wonderful conversation. So I don't want to go back in time. However, if you go on a bus or tube these days, or wherever you, even when you're walking in the street, everybody's got their nose in their phone. It's a form of mind control. And the trouble with when you're on your phone, you are passive. You are being fed material. You are not being creative or original. And it's a very kind of passive way to live your life. And it's also very distracting. You need to have some peace to connect with your intuition. And you need to know who you are. And everything on your phone and the internet is telling you who to be or who to follow and who to copy. So that's why I suggest that, you know, not a massive unplugging, but I do suggest regular periods each day where you just say, right, that's it, phone off, switch it to silence. I'm going to find out about me, my time, who am I, without the beeping of a text or scrolling the internet. I don't want my life to be an endless scroll. I want to be authentic and real. And that is one of the toughest, that's why I put it first, because I say to people, if you can actually do that for at least an hour a day, that's by far the most powerful thing you can do for yourself. Most of us these days don't like being alone without our phone. Have you seen people in the streets, how they clutch them? The panic when people lose their phone, it's like I've seen people in tears. And it's understandable because your whole life, but you should, why are you putting your whole life into a little black box like that? And also, people spend so much time creating an avatar online that has very disconnected from who they really truly are. I find it very depressing scrolling news feeds of people. And sometimes it feels like an endless scream to me of notice me, notice me. And I'm thinking, why are these people wanting so much attention? What is lacking in their life? What is so empty that they need 100,000? Who needs 100,000? You can't have 100,000 friends. Who needs it and why? Of course, it's an income stream for some people, but some people it isn't. It's about the validation, because they can't get the validation from who they are.
Yeah. It's become a new career goal, hasn't it? Influencer. Yeah. I want to be an influencer. Let's talk about the dreams, because you mentioned dreams earlier. And there's one part that really intrigued me. You know, you give a number of steps in the process. But you say the final and perhaps most powerful step is to let your dreams know you've heard them. And one way to do this is to live out an aspect of your dream. How does that help us? Tell us about that.
Well, basically, for example, if you dream of someone and you haven't spoken to them for a while, just send them a text. You know, just, you know, say, hey, what's up? Just so, and that what you're doing then is you're basically telling your dreaming mind, which is your intuitive, your spiritual self, I'm noticing you. And your dreaming mind is just like everything in this universe. The more attention you pay to it, the more it responds. People like attention. So does your dreaming mind. Pay it attention. Say, I've heard you. I'm listening to you. I'm carrying this through. Talk to me some more. Because I find that when I have dreams, you know, I have some very powerful dreams, and usually there's elements in it, like if I'm swimming in the dream or I'm wearing yellow, which I never wear, I will go and buy a yellow pair of gloves just because my dream has informed me that maybe yellow is the color I need in my life. And it's very rewarding because I found the more I do that, the more rich and vivid and meaningful my dreams and helpful my dreams become. Just pay attention to your dreams. Your dreams love it when you pay attention. That's why even if your dream isn't that meaningful, write it down. Think about it. Because your dreaming mind knows that you're paying attention, and we all like to be heard. It must be very frustrating if you're a dream and you keep constantly sending these wonderful dreams to someone and they wake up and just think, oh well, get on with my day. Then they're gonna give up, aren't they? Think, why bother? It's like that.
What about the ritual of thinking backwards? How can reversing the way that we think help boost our intuition?
Because intuition comes from this spiritual unseen world, and from all the research I've done into near-death experiences, the afterlife, angels, one thing that comes across to me loud and clear is there is no concept of time. Past, present, and future merge. And one of the biggest issues people have when they encounter spirituality or wanting to understand dreams or messages from the departed is they try to approach it in a logical way, in an earthbound way. And basically, encouraging you to think backwards is a bit like the life review that you have when in near-death experiences. It says you see your life in reverse. And it's because time turns on its head and you begin to see that there is no past, present and future, there's just this eternal present. And that little exercise is one that is extremely hard to do because you're fighting your logical earthbound self and sort of saying, I'm going to look at this in a more spiritual way. That's why I do it. It's quite fun actually, because you feel quite proud of yourself when you can actually do it. Because most people can only last for about 5 seconds. Think about your day backwards when you go to bed. You're going to immediately impose logical order, and we want to suspend logic when we are dealing with intuition.
Yeah, well, logic, it must be the enemy of intuition. We spoke earlier about phones and how intrusive they are and distracting. And you have daydreaming is a really important factor in, improving
kids
their
don't
intuition.
Daydream anymore. Kids,
no,
so sad.
No, they
kids
don't
daydream. I remember at school, I mean, I was constantly, when I did go to school, because I had to, most of the time I was home educated for family reasons because we were always on the go. But when I did, I was always looking at the window. I would look at the leaves. I used to love autumn, watching the leaves out the window. I was gone, daydreaming. And when I would walk home, looking at the sky, cloud watching. Oh, I still love cloud watching. But if you've got your phone, you don't do it. And I know now, because I am sort of stepping out from the shadows a bit, because I was always a bit of an invisible author, because I tried to live the message of my books. I don't think spirituality should be something you aggressively promote. But obviously, we live in different times, so I've had to adapt. But I find now that I have to consciously think about not checking my phone. Immediately, if I'm walking somewhere or going somewhere, check the phone, not allowing myself to simply savor where I am. Even in conversations, I have kicked myself sometimes. I've gone for coffee with a friend, my phone goes, she's talking, I pick up the phone. And it's something I'm fighting all the time.
Well, I had a conversation this morning with my daughter-in-law about my granddaughter, who is an athlete, and she's just, been invited to join a big netball team for the county, and we were discussing the fact that she's so busy with activities. When is she going to get her time to do nothing and daydream and
that,
you know, ignite that creativity? And that's something that people are beginning to overlook.
Yeah, and most people actually, when they do get time, when there's nothing going on, or for some reason their phones run out of battery, there's panic. They don't know what to do with themselves. And that is basically a disconnect with spirit, because spiritually fulfilled people, time alone is rich, because it's a wholeness, an awareness of who you are and where you are. But it's a mark of someone who really is lacking perhaps in the self-love department, that when they are alone, they panic and they need to be surrounded by activities. But of course, now people have the internet to never be alone. You're never really alone.
No, you're never alone with the internet, for sure.
No.
But perhaps if people understood, as you point out in the book, that research shows that people who take time to daydream are smarter and more productive than those who take regular mental time in.
I can't think of, I read about some really amazing entrepreneur or innovator who literally only works for 4 hours a day, and the rest of the time likes to go fishing, because it's all about that being productive when they need to be, and then allowing themselves to breathe. And that's why, you know, most of us, sleep is the only time we switch off. And that's why sometimes we have our greatest insights when we wake up in the morning, because we switched off. I wish I'd like to have a little bit of daydreaming back. See where you can travel.
Absolutely. Yeah. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm speaking with best-selling mind, body, spirit author Teresa Chung, whose latest book, 21 Rituals to Ignite Your Intuition, utilizes the proven power of ritual to help you tap into, trust, and cultivate your intuition as a powerful guiding force in your life. We'll be back with more tips on supercharging your intuition after the break.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. Om Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single Om Times endeavor. Host your show with Om Times Radio Network.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Teresa Chung, ritual number 12, wear different shoes. Tell me about that one.
And that's really encouraging you to have empathy. And when we talk about people getting so materialistic and distracted, and one of the symptoms of that is loss of empathy. It's all about me. And I find it very sad today that people are unable to embrace the viewpoints of others, even if they disagree with them. And flexing your empathy muscle can certainly boost your intuition, because the two are very closely linked.
Now that ties in with one of the other rituals, because you wrote about the fact There was an interesting piece of research. I'm just trying to find where you said intuition isn't just about helping us make better life decisions for ourselves. It can also help us understand others. And that it's often said that we're the average of the five people we are closest to in our lives. So it's vital that we spend our time with people who are right for us. So are you saying then that also learning to harness our intuition helps us read other people better?
Oh, yes, because people who are disconnected from themselves, not spending enough time finding out who they are, will make disastrous relationship choices. People who do not have their best interests at heart often take advantage of them, or the relationship's superficial. If you are tuned into your intuition, you will know what is acceptable in a relationship and what isn't. It's been heartbreaking, actually, because I did some work last year with the world expert in narcissistic abuse. I wrote the preface to her book about it. Very sensitive people who are constantly going back to people who are very, very narcissistic. And they are totally, the book was about how they are totally disconnected from their intuition, because your intuition knows what is right and good for you. And if you are disconnected from it, you're going to make very poor relationship choices.
Well, this is, I mean, and this takes us right back to the conversation about the internet and telephones, because we are becoming a much more disconnected society.
It's funny because we've never been better connected, and yet
exactly.
So, you are right. Yeah. There. What a great observation. Yeah. Yeah, you are so right.
Ritual 21, which is the last one in the book, Live and Die Another Day. I loved that one. Share that with us.
Inspired by the Para tribe, a tribal culture, which believes that when you go to sleep, if you sleep for more like 8 than 8 hours, because they limit their sleep, actually. I'm not recommending this, but they are called a tribal culture that only naps. Because if they fall asleep for longer than 8 hours, they believe that the old you has died and a new person is born. And they give themselves another name. And then some people in that tribe with hundreds of names, that you are a new being. And we all get that sense at the end of the day, often, that the day's gone. And then when you wake up in the morning, things are different. So a part of you has died, and it has. The part of you that died is the person you were yesterday. Life is a constant dying and saying goodbye. I mean, if you think back to when you were a child, for example, a 7 or 8 year old.
We lost you there, Teresa. Yeah, the line dipped again. Could you just repeat what you said?
Sorry, I don't know where did I stop. I said, can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Okay, brilliant. As I said, I think rituals are... my book, 21 Rituals That Change Your Life, it was a huge success, really. It's 17 languages now. It's gone all over the world, including China, Japan, Eastern European countries, Spain. It's amazing, all over the world. And the message was loud and clear. Too much emphasis on positive thinking. Let's switch it to positive doing, the power of positive action. And let's put less emphasis on our thoughts and more on what we do, because we've all met people in life who are all talk and no action. And how frustrating are they? And my thinking was, well, what if the universe thinks of someone who's doing, say somebody does 2 hours of meditation a day, does all their yoga, sets their intentions, but doesn't actually have positive actions? How frustrated must the universe be? It's a bit like people who are all talk and no action. So I've been trying to inspire a movement of let's be positive doers. And you can't always think positive. Negative thinking actually sometimes is important, because it makes us be more realistic, and it can give us a kick up the butt sometimes. Let's put more emphasis on positive doing, and then the positive thinking can catch up afterwards. Because let me say, when we go for a run, for example, you might be feeling a bit depressed when you go for a run. The action, the physical action of running, boosts your mood. The body impacts the mind, just as the mind impacts the body, and there's been too much emphasis in the New Age movement on the mind, because again, it's easy to just sit there and do your chanting and your rituals and your meditation, and not enough emphasis on actively doing these rituals, actively living a spiritual life. Whatever's going on in your head, do positive and let the thinking catch up later. That's my message.
Yeah. So aside from the being in action, what is your favorite ritual to do?
My favorite ritual is the dream recall. I was blessed to have written the Element Encyclopedia of Dreams. Now the Dream Dictionary with HarperCollins, and it's one of my biggest selling books. And ever since then, dreams have really been such an important part of my life. They have informed me and enriched me and guided me towards the Institute of Noetic Sciences, where I work with the precognition dream expert there, Julian Mossbridge, and the team there. So the dream journal, keeping a record of your dreams, it is exciting to read that journal and look back and think, my dreams were foreshadowing what's happening now. Mm. My dreams knew before I did. I love dreaming. I feel quite down when I wake up in the morning and I can't remember it. It does sometimes happen. And yeah. I love waking up with a vivid dream, a colorful dream. It informs my books. It gives me book titles. The Premonition Code came up in a dream for me, that title. It informs a lot of my life. I can sense in my dreams how other people are getting on as well, because how they appear in dreams often is very, very accurate how these people are feeling about their lives. So dreams.
Well, yeah, I know Bernie Siegel once told me that, if a patient came to him and said that they dreamt that they had cancer, the first thing he would do is get them tested. He would never, ever argue against a dream.
No, dreams are... It's the world of sleep and dreams is a big mystery. Science is learning more about it, and we don't actually know why we dream, and we don't really know why we sleep, because people say, well, it's to rest the body. No, it's not, because people are very active when they sleep. A lot of people, you see them kicking or moving or talking. It's not even to rest the mind, because the mind is so busy when you sleep. It's filing information, it's sorting things out, it's sending out growth hormones. And I've come to the conclusion, this is my personal one, that we actually sleep to dream. That's what I think, to connect with our spiritual self. In our dreams, we are going in, opening the door to that realm, which is our home, our real home, where we come from, and we're just checking back in at home. That's why I think we sleep to dream.
Has there been one particular dream of yours that stands out as being so pivotal, predictive, so important?
Yeah, it's the one I mentioned in many of my books, in that my mother passed away when I was in my mid-20s, and she used to say this to me, take the right path, and she meant take the path that is your heart. But when I was in my early 30s, just become a mother, and I had my first radio interview, I had a dream where I met my mother, and she was again telling me to take the right path. And then the next day I was trailing a van, a truck that was going very, very, very slow, and it was frustrating me. And we headed to a junction, and I had a choice. I could take the right path and actually have a longer journey to my destination, or follow the truck where it was going to left and carry on at that slow pace. And I made the decision because I heard the dream flashed into my mind, and I went right. And I later find out that decision could, because I look at it realistically, could have saved my life, because there was a horrific accident involving that van where a dog went into the road. It was on the local news, and it really was very, very powerful for me, because I had that dream, and the night before, with this dilemma of left and right, and I believe that the decision I made could have saved me from injury or distress of some kind. Mm. So things like that, and then other dreams which have predicted what people, I've had trivial dreams, almost what people are going to wear the next day, things like that I've had, all sorts of dreams. And each time I just sit in awe. There's a part of me, as there is a part of everyone, that sees the bigger picture of my life. There is my higher and better self that knows what I need to be doing and where I need to be. And it's trying, and I think the journey of our lives is to learn as much as we can, do the best we can, not necessarily always being happy, because happy is sometimes isn't the best teacher, but learning through our disappointments and growing and connecting to that highest and best form of myself, which is my intuition. Intuition is spirit. It's our inner guide that knows the bigger picture of our lives before we do.
Yeah, as Dean King said, I believe it's the part seeing with the soul.
I think it's a part of us that goes on after death. If you've ever had the honor of sitting beside someone when they pass away, that spark that goes, that light that goes out, that's what I believe intuition is, all in connecting with the eternal part of us.
Mm. Teresa, we're almost out of time now. We have less than a minute left. Before you go, tell us, what book are you working on next?
Oh, my goodness. I've got so many books coming out. I have a ritual year book coming out. I've just completed a book called The Moon Fix, which is all about working with the rhythms of the moon. I've completed a book called Night Vision, which is I'm working with an artist, actually, which is a lovely way. Also, we live in a very much younger audiences especially love rich pictures. So this book has got 80 stunning illustrations of taking you into the world of the dream. I've done a dream decoder pack, which is cards to unlock your unconscious. I'm going to be writing another book about the afterlife, where I'm coordinating with the Windbridge Institute. All sorts of things. I'm very blessed, as I said.
Despite everything we've spoken about, when do you get the chance to dream?
Oh, I do. After about 5 or 6 o'clock at night, I switch off. I literally do. That's my time. And spending time with my dogs. I'm very blessed because my children are an age now and they no longer need me as much. So it means that I can indulge my passion. But I think sometimes when something's your passion, it doesn't feel like work. And I have been very blessed all my life. I'm sure with you doing this radio, it doesn't feel like work, does it? If you love what you're doing. And that's,
absolutely,
I think, what your intuition wants you to do, that you're doing something. I think having an interest and a passion, that's something that makes you jump out of bed in the morning and think, yes, I've got to get on and do this, is the greatest gift. Yeah. And I say, connecting with your intuition, that's another most benefit of it, is people who connect with their intuition, they find that. You can see that light in their eyes. And whether it's a passion for embroidery or collecting stamps or whatever it is, it's something that you feel you are on this earth to do. It's what you feel is your soul quest.
Teresa Chung, I'm going to have to stop you there because we are out of time, but it's been wonderful to speak with you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
And thank you for all you do. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. 21
Bye-bye.
Rituals to Ignite Your Intuition, published by Watkins. For more information about Teresa Chung's book and work, visit her website, theresachung.com. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. Thanks for joining me today, and I look forward to being with you at the same time next week. Till then, it's goodbye from me.